Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Yomi Ksubos Nandalad. We are holding on Gimel Amud Beis, the second line from the bottom of the Amud. So we learn that a daughter can feed herself using her departed father's assets. She gets mezoines. She's entitled to mezoines. It's part of the Ksuba obligations. Boy, Rabbi Lazar asks Rabbi Lazar, what happens if she's a bas shenia? This fellow married an isha who's forbidden to him, not a primary erva, but a secondary erva who is asur midrabban, mother's etc. etc. The second tier arayis. And they have a daughter, and he passes away. That daughter, bas shenia, yesh la mezoines, or ain la mezoines? Is she entitled to mezoines? Or not? What's the question? Ki even de les lo kesuba. The fact is, mother has no kesuba. The chachamim revoked any kesuba obligations between this man and this woman because it's a forbidden union. Shall we say, les lo mezoini? Just as there's no primary kesuba obligation between this man and woman, likewise, their daughter is not entitled to anything which is associated with kesuba obligation. Or perhaps you can differentiate. Ima de avda isura, kanesuha rabbanon. The mother who committed an isur by marrying this man. A kanas, a penalty, is applied to her. Her ksuba entitlement is revoked. But ihi, this daughter, de lay avda isura, who never committed an isur. It's not her fault. Like on Sora Bona, perhaps there's no kness in this case, and she is entitled to mezoines after father's passing. Teku, we let it stand unresolved. By Rava, another question. Basarusa. They're engaged. And they have a daughter. Is she entitled to mezoines after her father's passing? Yesh la mezoines? Oh, yein la mezoines? What's the question here? Ki even the isla kesuba. Fact is, the kesuba obligation kicks in at erusin, at engagement. Isla, likewise the daughter, is entitled to her entitlements. Or perhaps we can say, kiven de lo tekinu rabbana kesuba. Since, after all, the chachamim were misaken that kesuba is only actually written and formalized at the marriage, ad sha'as nesun, until marriage, it really isn't a ksuba document in hand, so perhaps all these enhanced ksuba obligations, such as feeding a daughter after death, is only triggered and activated at that later point, but not during erusin, and therefore lesla, she is not entitled. Teku, we let it stand. Another question by Rapap Basanusa. This fellow interacted with an isha in a forced manner, and they have a daughter. The halacha is, he has to pay a knas to the isha. He must marry her. So what happens to their daughter? Yesh la mezoines? Oy ein la mezoines? Is she entitled to mezoines or not? Ali bod rab yes. But rab Yehuda, according to this shita, loite boilach, there's no question that there is mezoines. Because he holds the amar, yesh la kesuba amona. Even by an anusa, where he's paying knas before anything happens. Before marriage, he's already paying penalty. Still, when he actually marries her, there is a ksuba payout obligation between the man and the woman. Knas does not replace ksuba. There is ksuba, which includes this element of mezoines as well. To daughter upon father's passing. There's no question there that she has mezoines. Kiti boylach. The question can be posed, Aliva de Rabban and Amri, who they? They claim, they say, Yotza kesef kenasa b'ksavos. The knas payment that he must pay out because of the oinus experience, that is sort of counted against the ksuba. That is deducted. That replaces the ksuba. So although he's marrying her at the end of the day, but there's no ksuba obligation, he's already paid out his obligations. My. So now we have a question. Ki even the lesla ksuba lesla mazoine. Perhaps, just as there is no ksuba payout anymore, mezoines as well does not apply. Or perhaps ksuba By Ksuba, it's different. Taimamai, why? Why would you say there is no Ksuba by an Oynes? Because after all, why is there a Ksuba to begin with? Kedei Sheloi Dei Kalo Bein Avlo Yitzia. He shouldn't just get rid of his wife easily. Ksuba equals obligation, equals commitment, equals a proper relationship. That's typical, but over here, there's no need to reinforce this relationship. He's committed to her. V'ha, lo yimotzi ma'apiklo. An oynes may not disengage from his wife. He has to hold on to her. It's a chiyuv. There's no need for ksuba to keep the marriage intact. Okay, so that pertains to the actual ksuba payout between the man and the woman, but why would that affect his daughter's mezoinis entitlement? That's unrelated to shaloi te kala ve'enav lo yitzia. The ksuba payout, which is based on that concept, is irrelevant by the oinus, where he has to hold on to her in any case. It's a guaranteed marriage, but why wouldn't the daughter get mezoinis? Just as any daughter. Take her, we let it stand. At teheyosfa bebesi, another tnai ksuba is, he passes on, his almana, his widow, will support herself using her departed husband's estate. Until what point? Forever? Until she leaves the home, until she remarries. As long as she's still identifying, she's still sitting in the home and identifying with her former husband, she's entitled to mezonos. Tani Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef focused on the wording of the condition, of the tnai, the stipulation. Bebesi is repeated once and again to teach us veloy bebiksi, as opposed to a small, crowded abode which cannot really accommodate the needs of the orphans and the almana together. In that case, they can send her home. They can tell her, look, go back to your father's home and stay there, because this is not a place that accommodates all of us. Aval mezoini isla. But the chiddush is that although she leaves them and goes back home, she's still entitled to mezoinis. Because, you know, I didn't leave willingly. Well, the point wasn't to, you know, abandon you and to disengage and detach myself from my former husband. So typically, a precondition for mezoinis is her staying on in the home. But when it's not practical, she can go back home to her father's home, and she still maintains her mezoinis rights. Mar Baravashi Omar, he disagrees. Afilu mezoinin amelesla. Once she leaves her husband's home, she loses mezoinis. V'les hilchasa k'ma Baravashi. We don't paskin like that. The fact is, in this case, these circumstances compelled her to leave, and therefore, she's still entitled to mezoinis. Amar v'nachman amar shmo tavu ali nase. Suppose somebody offered her, somebody proposed marriage to her, v'nispais, and she accepted the offer. Ein la mezoinis. From that point onward, she has disengaged from her former husband. No more mezoinis entitlement. Says the Gemara, apparently, if she did not accept that offer, you mean to say yesh la mezoinis? She's still entitled? And that's a bit difficult to understand, because if she's contemplating remarriage, she's involved in looking for a match, apparently she's already disengaged. She's no longer identifying with her former husband. She's not staying behind to maintain and as she says, the covet of the Baal. That's not her interest. She's looking for a new partner. So why would she get mezoinis? Omar of Anan, Lididi, Mefar Shalom Minei Mar Shmuel. To me, it was explained in the name of Mar Shmuel that it's not a clear-cut halacha. It depends on the circumstance. It depends why she's not accepting this marriage offer. Is it because of her husband? She can't leave that home. She's still identifying with him. In that case, she's still entitled to mezoinis. Or is it because she hasn't found a suitable match? In that case, she loses mezonos. Mine demar Shmuel. So it was explained to me from Shmuel. Amra. If this almana is saying, look, I can't accept this offer. It's too premature. Machmas pleni bali. I can't negate the honor of my former husband. I can't leave yet. In that case, she's still emotionally attached to him and to his household. Yesh la mezonos, she gets mezonos. But machmas bnei adam she'einan mugan la. But the problem is there is no suitable match. In that case, ein la mezonos, she's already 1 foot out. She has no mezonos. Amar Rav Chisda, zinsa ein la mezonos. If she commits znus, that too is a disengagement and no mezonos going forward. Amar Rav Yosef, another example, kichlo pirchasa. Let's say she's beautifying herself. She loses mezonos, and Rashi says once again, this is a gilui das, an indication that she's no longer connected to the kavod of her husband. Manda Amar Zinsa, the one who explained that Zinsa revokes the right, Koshkin kichla pirchasa, certainly beautification. Manda Amar kichla pirchasa, but the other shita, that only beautification is considered a disengagement, aval Zinsa isla. He'll maintain that Znus does not had the same effect. You know why? My timer. Yetzer answer. She was compelled by the Yetzer. She had a desire to associate with a man. You can't really consider that a disengagement from her former husband. It was just a one-time incident, and therefore, she still holds on to the mezonos. But the Gemara concludes, v'les hilchasa k'cholani shmatza. We do not actually accept all these halachis. An isha will not lose mezonos unless she really did something in a pronounced fashion to indicate that she's terminating her relationship with her former husband. Once she walks into Bezdin and claims, where's my ksuba payout? That's when her new life begins. Says the Gemara V'loi. Really? That's the only way to lose mezonos? Toiveya de ksuba in bezn? Vatanya, the Brisa says, machro ksubasa. Merely just having sold her ksuba rights to others. Umishkuna ksubasa, using it as a guarantor. Asa so ksubasa apoitigo, she takes the field which is there to back up her ksuba claim, and she uses it as an apoitiki, which is a Rashi te apoitikoi, it's a joint word. Your claim, she has a creditor, right? So your claim is applied to this field. So she's sort of using the field, which was earmarked for her ksuba payment, to secure another loan. So at this point, she's already doing business. She's already activated her ksuba, payment process. Asu ksubas la'acher, elo mezonos, her mezonos stops right there. Hani in. So only these processes, avo tevas loy, apparently just simply claiming, wanting to collect yiksuba, that doesn't do the trick. Answers the Gemara, actually it does. Hani, these processes discussed here, selling the ksuba, etc., it doesn't matter how it happened, where it happened. Bebezdin, bein bebezdin, whether it was done with Bezdin's authority, bein shaloy bebezdin, or without using Bezdin's services, that's considered having activated the ksuba process, no more mezonos. But merely tevas, if she's just speaking about collecting her money, she's starting to claim her ksuba, that depends where it happened. If it was a formal claim, but bezdin, yes, in. That activates the ksuba collection process, no more mezonos. But shaloi bebezdin loy, but out of bezdin, that's just an informal discussion, and does not really activate it to the point that she loses mezonos. Back to the Mishnah. So how is it written in the Ksuba? You can continue having mezonos as long as you're my home and throughout the extended almana period, you can have mezonos. But there was a slight change in Nusach, depending on where you lived. In Yerushalayim, it was as long as you stick around. In Yehuda area, they changed it. Until the Yersh and the orphans choose to pay out the ksuba, so it's up to them. So in Yerushalayim, it was up to the Isha, as long as you want to stick around. In Yehuda, it was up to the Yisayimim, until they decide to pay out your ksuba. How do we paskin? Itmar, Rav Amara, Halacha Kansha Yehuda. It's up to the Yisayimim. Ushmor Amar Halacha Kansha Galil. It's up to the Isha. Bavel, in the city of Bavel, V'chol Par V'dah, and all the outskirts, the suburbs, no Karav, they followed Rav's opinion. It's up to the Yisayimim. Naharda, in the other town, V'chol Par V'dah, and all its suburbs, Nog, because Shmuel, they followed Shmuel, that was Shmuel's locale, and they followed his opinion. That it's up to the Almana to decide at what point she wants to leave the home. So there was a story of a marriage which had both factors. She came from one place and he came from the other. Which way, how do we deal with it? Hahibas Mechoyza. There was an Isha from Mechoyza. Davas Nesivel Nardo. So she came from Mechoyza, which was near Babel, married to a man from Nahardo. Also the Kameder of Nachman. So it was after his passing. Question is, until what point can she collect mezonos? Is it up to her choice or up to their choice? So they came to Rav Nachman. Shama l'kala. Rav Nachman, by listening to her voice and her accent, he figured the bas mechoyza. He figured out that she came from mechoyza. Amr lehu. So he told them, okay, that's the halacha. Bavel v'chal par v'dah no karav. We know that Bavel and mechoyza, all that, that's Rav's place, and they follow Rav's shita. It's up to the Yisayimim. Amr lehi. So they responded to Rav. True, her accent gave it away, but you must know one more thing. Her husband was a Nardo man. Amar lehu. Oh, if that's the case, he says, in that case, we go like Shmuel, because it's all determined by the man's locale. He, after all, he's the one that's writing the ksuba, and it goes according to his custom. And therefore, in this case, the Isha can decide until what point she collects her mezonos. V'adecha Nahardo, until which area is still considered Nahardo, adecha the sagi kaba de Nahardo, until where they still use the kab, the measuring containers of Nahardo, the measures, Ashi says, until where they measure the tzvua b'midas kab Nahardo, using the measuring methods of Nahardo. Here comes a new question. Itzmar, almana. So we have a widow after her husband's passing, and she's wearing clothing. Is that hers? Or do we discount and deduct that from the ksuba payout? We have a machlekes. Rav Amar Shaman, we appraise Masha'olea, what she's wearing, and it's deducted from the ksuba. Ushmol Amar Ein Shaman Masha'olea. No, we don't deduct it. It's rightfully hers. Amar Avchia Bar Abin, v'chilufa, b'lakit. A lakit is a day laborer, a fellow who is a living laborer. He actually sticks around for a week or two to do some jobs around the house, etc. At the end of which, he gets some sort of salary. Now, all throughout that living period, the employer might give him some begadim to use for the meantime. What happens at the end of his work period? Does he keep those begadim or not? V'chilufa, we switch around the shittas. That's Rav Chiya Bar Abin's approach, that Rav will hold that the locket keeps what he's wearing, as opposed to the almana who cannot keep what she's wearing. And some explain because the locket, he can just be here and gone tomorrow. The fact that he's allowing him to put on his clothing indicates that he's giving it away to him. So that's Rav's opinion, whereas Shmuel will go the other way. And by the almana, whatever she's wearing is meant for her. By the locket, it's just a temporary thing. I didn't mean to give away the clothing. It was just as long as you're here. In any case, we switch around the shittas. But Rav Kahana Masna, he had a different version. V'chein belakit. Same and consistent. Just as the din ba'almana, likewise the din ba'elakit. Umanach basimana. And he had and Rav actually had a formula to remember, the halacha. The same halacha applies to both. Yasma, that's the lakit fellow, the worker. He's called a yasam, perhaps because he has to be looked after. His hair and he's looked after. V'armalta, and the almana, in both cases, shlach, undress them, a puk, and send them out. So their begadim do not belong to them. So that's Rav's opinion, whereas Shmuel maintains, they have it, they wear it, they keep it. Omar of Nachman, af agav desnan b'masnisin kavaseh de Shmuel. Although we find a Mishnah which supports Shmuel, you wear it, you keep it, hilchasa kavaseh de Rav, halacha lamasa follows Rav, we deduct it from their pay. Where is the Mishnah that supports Shmuel? Desnan, echad amagdish nachasav. Whether he committed to give all his assets to the Beis HaMikdash. Ve'echad amarachas atzmo, who he obligated himself to pay his value to the Mikdash. Now the Gabbai comes to collect. He doesn't find much of value. He has to go looking for assets. Einloi, so the Gabbai who's collecting, Einloi, he has no right to collect and to interfere. Loi biksus ishtoi, whether the garments belonging to his wife, or his children's clothing, even begotten which he had dyed with his wife in mind. They haven't yet worn it. She hasn't yet worn it, but it was prepared for her. Or new sandals which he bought for them. They don't belong to him. They were earmarked and designated for his family. Apparently. And that's the halacha. Whatever is meant for them, in terms of garments and shoes, is theirs. Here as well, by the Amana, whatever she's wearing is hers. Amali Rav of Nachman, well, if we have a Mishnah, once you have a Mishnah to support Shmuel, whatever you're wearing is yours, so then Amai Hilchasa Kavasei the Rav, why would you say that the Halacha Lamasa follows Rav? That we don't give it to them. Amar Leisa, he responded, L'cha'ira, a very rare term in the Gemara, but very commonly used today in Svarim, L'cha'ira, so it's sourced in this Gemara, Ksubas Nafshan Dal, L'cha'ira. It would appear, meaning at first glance, Kishmol Rehita. When you run through the Mishnah, it seems that Shmuel is in the right. So he brings on the side from the Aruch that it's a lashon of Oir, Ka'ira. When you just take a glance at it, when you, you know, lashon of being exposed to it. At first glance, it appears that Shmuel is right. But When you pay close attention, when you are ma'ayin further, you will realize the Rav is the more probable sheet. Why? My time. Ki akni la adata lo mekem kameh. When a man gives, you know, garments to his family, the point is that she should stay with him. It's a long-term proposition. And that explains the halacha of the magdish and the marech. Sure. Everybody's alive and well. We hope until 120 they'll be around. They'll use it. Sure. Hadata lemishka lemeipak leyaknila. But the intent, if the intent and purpose is to take this and leave, of course that's not what he had in mind. So by the almana as well, she's not with him anymore, and therefore it's not really considered, you know, rightfully hers. There was a daughter-in-law, the Bey Baral Yashiv, who was part of the Baral Yashiv family. And we were speaking, you know, after a fellow passed away. Hava katava ksubasa miyasmi. Okay. Came time for her to collect the ksuba from the Yisayim. Hava kamam tilu lebedinu. So they were taking her to the bezin to discuss it. Amri, but then they turned around, they took a look at her, and they said, one second. Zila lon milsa. It's embarrassing for us. It's shameful for us. The tizli hachi. That you appear as such in public. You're unpresentable. Ozla, so she went, she took all her entire wardrobe and dressed herself. Now they came to Ravina. The question was, the begadim that she's wearing, are they hers or not? Amar Lahu, he tells them, the Rav, we follow Rav, the Amar, who said, Almanu shomin mashaleo. We appraise, we evaluate, and we deduct it from the ksuba. Okay, let's move on to the nedunya sugya. A fellow promises a dowry. Hahu da amar lahu. So this fellow, before his passing, declares, nedunya labras. I want you to give, you know, such and such in terms of jewelry, etc., for my daughter. So he specified, you know, three necklaces, etc. Zal Nadunya. Turns out that when the time came, you know, time to actually give it to her, the items went down in value. The question is, do the orphans have to compensate for that, or can they just give her these items, despite their lower value? Amar Avi Debar Aben, Purna, the prophet, the gain, Liasmi, is the Yisayimim's gain, meaning they don't have to compensate further. This is what he promised her. These items, she takes it, whether it's same or lower value, doesn't matter. Likewise, Hahuda Amarlu, this fellow declared, Arba Meazuzi, Min Chamra Labras. I have a whole wine cellar full of barrels of wine. I want you to take some wine, 400 zuz worth, and give it to my daughter for the Nadunya. It turns out that later on, the price of wine shot up. Iyakir Chamra became more valuable. So the question is she entitled to that amount of wine, which is now worth more? For instance, let's say the 400 zuz that he spoke about at that time would equal 400 barrels of wine, just for argument's sake, right? So in effect, he promised her 400 barrels of wine. Now, those same 400 barrels of wine are worth double, triple. So do the same have to give her the 400 barrels, despite the fact that they doubled and tripled in value? She's going to get more than 400 zuz, or can they cut away? All they need to do is give her 400 zuz from the wine. Amar Vesev, Rav Chali asked me here as well, the Yisayim are on top there, the ones that gain. He promised her 400 zuz worth of wine at the moment that she receives it. When she'll actually take that payout, she gets the 400 zuz from the wine. So no more than 400 zuz worth. There were some relatives of Rabbi Yechon. Havalu itas abba. They had a stepmother. This was still during their father's lifetime. We had this reference to the stepmother 2 days ago. So there was another aspect to the story. This was still during the husband's lifetime, and they saw kamafsada mazoni. She's tapping into his assets and consuming a lot of mazonis in an excessive manner. They realized that this is going to cost her. They're going to cost them a lot of money upon his passing. So what's the solution? Also, commit Rabbi Yechon. So he came to Rabbi Yechon. Amrul, he gave him advice. He says, "Izilu, go ahead. Ve'imrulein, tell Lavuchan, your father, the Yachidlo, Arul Mazayna." Oh, of course, he can't get away from giving her Mazaynas. It's part of the Tanaik Suba. But why doesn't he do something like this? Let him be Miyachid. Let him designate a certain property and say, "This is the property which you can draw Mazaynas from." So now you're limited. You're restricting her ability to collect. She can use this property to sell for mezonos, but no more. You're sort of capping the expense. That was Rabbi Yechanan's approach. Also, the committed Rish Lakish. Then when they came to Rish Lakish and he heard about this whole thing, Amar Lahu, Rish Lakish totally disagreed with Rabbi Yechanan. Just the opposite. You're making it worse for yourself. Kolshkin, of course, Sheribul Mezonos, he's actually expanding her reach and her ability. Because the fact is, he doesn't have to specify that he's actually committing his karka for her mezainis. That's an automatic stipulation in the system. She has a right to collect mezainis. The fact that he's adding this, additional guarantee, it almost sounds like he's trying to expand her reach. Look, if the kids don't provide, you can take from this karka. So if anything, it sounds like he's enhancing her capabilities rather than limiting them. Amar lei, so they told Rish Lakish, Rabbi Yechanan lei amarachi. Rabbi Yechanan disagreed with you. He said that when you single out a karka, you're actually limiting her to the value of that karka. Rish Lakish was not impressed. Amar lei, he tells them, Zilu, Havilo, go ahead and give her whatever she needs, without capping and restricting. Miloy, if you don't listen, ma pikna lechu. It's a harsh statement. Ma pikna lechu, Rabbi Yechanan, I will extract Rabbi Yechanan meunaycha from your ears. Meaning, I'll put you in cherem. I'll just excommunicate you, so you can no longer rely and listen to Rabbi Yechanan. Also look at Rabbi Yechon. So he came back to Rabbi Yechon to complain. Amar lo, he tells him, look, hands up. Ma esa, what can I do? Shekinegdi. Rish Lakish, who is equal to me in stature, is my colleague. Cholukolai. He disagrees with me. I can't do anything. Amar Bravo. One more thing. Lididi mefashili minevid Rabbi Yechon. To me, it was explained in the name of Rabbi Yechon that actually it's not so simple. Even when a husband designates karka, it doesn't always limit her. It all depends on exactly how he expresses that commitment. Amar limizoynes ribula. If he says, this karka will be for limizoynes, so he's actually enhancing her ability. You have the standard commitment, a standard tnai ksuba, and this will be something to back up that, you know, that entitlement. Amar bimizoynes. But if he uses a base, which is a restrictive expression, this karka will be in lieu. This karka will sort of be where you can source your mezoinus. This will be where to draw the mezoinus from. Kutzas la mezoinus. In that case, he's limiting her. He restricted her to this karka, and no more than that. So even Rabbi Yechon was only in this type of case of bimezoinus. Hadran lachnara. So let's summarize the Gemara up until this point. One of the Tanai Ksuba is to provide for daughter and widow after death. Tanai of Mezainus. Until when can a Bas get the Mezainus? Once she's married, Oy Begeris, no Mezainus. An Arusa, we're going back to yesterday's daf a bit as well. So an Arusa, she's engaged, well, Machlekes, Rav says no Mezainus, Levi says yes Mezainus. Mimma Enes, so she was married and she came back. Tanakama says yes, Rabbi Yehuda says no. What about a Bas of Yevamo? This was discussed yesterday, and today we picked up from Bas Shnia, Bas Arusa, and Bas Anusa. We leave it as a question mark. An Almana is entitled to Mezainus only up until she accepted a marriage offer, or she hasn't yet found her match, but she's still looking. In that case, no Mezainus. Or if she's Tevea de Ksuba in Bez, or she gave away the ksuba, machar, ksubasa, etc., no mezainis. Until what point does she have the mezainis? Rav says, until the yershin decide to give her the ksuba payment. According to Shmuel, it's up to her to decide whether she wants the ksuba payment or not. Until then, she can have her mezainis. Whatever the begadma she's wearing, according to Rav, we deduct it from the ksuba, according to Shmuel, not. If he's meyachid de karka, and he says, bim mezainis, according to Rav Yechana, that's restrictive. According to Shlokish, it's actually enhancing her ksuba, her mezainus entitlement. Continues the Mishnah. Afa bisha amru psula goiva masayim v'amona mona. Although standard commitment for the psula is 200 zuz and the almona gets 100, that's standard. But you can add. Imratza lahis, if a husband chooses to add, there's no limit. Sky's the limit. Afilu me amona yosef. Now, nis'ar malo nis'gash. Suppose the unexpected happens. He dies or he divorces. Beimena erison. Beimena nisun. Whether they were merely engaged or married as well. Goyba sakar doesn't matter. She gets everything. She gets the base amount and the tesefis. Rabbezim nazari oimeno. It depends. Beimena nisun. Post marriage, sure. Goyba sakar, she gets everything. Mina erison, but only engaged. Then we go back to the base amount. Besula goyba masayim. But not the supplemental amount. Why? The whole purpose was to marry. The presumed mindset, the umdana is, I only gave it if we marry. Rabbi Daimer. Sure, basic chiv is 200, but you can tinker with it. Im Ratza, if he wants, Kosev lebesul or shtashel mesayim, you can commit to 200. Vikosevis, his kabalti, muhammad, she gives him a receipt. She's like, be Michael, 100. I received 100 from you. This way, he's only chayv 100. Or by the almana, or almana mana, he writes 100. Vikay service, and she returns with a receipt. His kabalti mechachamishim zuz. I've already received 50 from you. This way, he's only chayv 50. That's Rabbi Yehuda's shita. Rabbi Omer, no way. Kalapichas lebesula bimasayim. Ula almana mimana. If one deducts from the standard 200 of the besula or the standard 100 for the almana, Harizu bilas znus. We consider it like improper interaction. The Mefarshim explained that according to Rabbi Meir, The ksuba obligation is rooted in the Torah. It's a chiyuv Torah. You can't manipulate, you can't tinker with it. And if he's not going to comply, the marriage is hasn't really been established on proper footing with a proper commitment and obligation, and therefore we consider it like zinus. Pshita, of course, why would the Mishnah have to tell you that you can add to the ksuba? Why would anybody refuse donations? I mean, why can't he just offer what he... Why does it have to be explained in the Mishnah? Pshita, ma'u de tema. Perhaps I would say kitsusa of the Rabban. Rabban did establish a set amount. 200 for the Basula, 100 for the Amana. Don't enhance and don't supplement. You know why? We don't want to embarrass a fellow who can't afford more. That would be the thinking. The chiddush of the Mishnah is no. After all, it's a personal thing. You can do what you want. If he wants to add, go ahead. Rotza lichtev lo like tani. See, if you look at the wording in the Mishnah, rather than saying rotza lichtev, if he wants to write the extra amount, right? It doesn't say that. Like tani, it doesn't say that. El rotza lohoisev. The Mishnah uses the word hoisafa. It's a supplemental amount. What does that sound like? That it relates to the previous amount. It's built. It's an enhanced base amount. Base is 200. This is enhanced. This extends and expands it. What's the difference between kasev and hoisev? The answer is mesayele l'rabi ayvu om raviyane. It's going to bring a riot of ayvu. Om raviyane. Tanai ksuba ki ksuba dummy. For instance, here we're speaking about the tesefes ksuba. That's a form of tanai ksuba. So the supplements in the ksuba are treated as the ksuba itself. Nafkamina, what will be the nafkamina? We're going to leave some for tomorrow. Let's just start. Nafkamina l'mecheres. Let's say, you know, she sells her ksuba rights. Ulamecheles, she gives it away. Right? She's mechel to her husband. That transaction, whether it's sale or forgiving, applies itself to the Iker Ksuba and to the Tesefes as well, because it's all considered one package Ksuba. We'll see the rest of Bezus Hashem tomorrow. Okay, so we spoke about many details of the Mizaynus of the Bas, Mizaynus of the Almana. Now we have the Mishnah. According to Rav Meir, 200 is absolute. You can't deduct. According to Rav Yehuda, you could deduct by way of writing a receipt. And we learned that one may be Moisif, it's allowed. Not only that, the Tosefes latches onto the Iker Ksuba. It's called one package deal, one unit, pertaining to many halachas. Hatzlacha Rabba and Psuras Tevis.